I'm Will Lewis. I'm on the Microsoft Translator team here at Microsoft Research. And we've been working very closely with the speakers here today who are all from Rochester. They're all from NTID at Rochester. Yes. Okay, good. Adaptation is working. Okay, so before I go into the introductions, I want to give you a little bit of background. We're actually trying out our auto transcription service. This is speech recognition that's running through our service. And one of the things we've done is adapted the models to the slides that they're presenting today, so it knows a lot of the vocabulary that's in the slides. So that helps improve the quality. If you are hearing participants, I would ask you if you could join this code. You can download the app to your phone or your computer. You can run it from a website. The website address is actually listed up there. This is the code. There's a QR code on this deck. I didn't put that in there, so it doesn't know that word. I should have put that in the deck. And what we'll do during the question session at the end of the talk, I would ask that you ask your questions through your device. So that what happens is in the question mode, it will actually show who is asking the question and show a transcript of your question on the screen. So I would ask you do that if you're hearing participants only. If you're a signing participant, just sign and the interpreters will pick up your question. Okay. Let me introduce the speakers today. We have three speakers. They'll be in two different talks, two half-hour talks. The first two speakers are Brian Traeger and Chris Campbell. Brian Traeger? Okay, I can't get it. Okay, anyway, these are the two speakers speaking today. They're both researchers from the Rochester Institute of Technology, and again, we've been working very closely with them for auto transcription in the classroom. They can give you some more background on the work that they're doing in that respect. And then the second speaker, who I won't introduce separately, we'll just go straight to the other talk, is Mark Marshark, who is a researcher at Rochester Institute of Technology, also at NTID, and he'll be giving a talk on deaf education. So there's slight there's a theme in the talks, but some slight differences in what will be presented. So without any delay, I'm going to hand it over to Brian and Chris. They'll be signing their talks, and the interpreters will be speaking for them. And then Mark will be speaking his talk, and the interpreters will be signing for him. Thank you very much.
Great. Does anyone need to use this QR code right now before we start? Great. Okay, so thank you all for coming. My name is Brian Traeger. My sign name is BT on the forehead. And we have Chris here as well. We're going to be talking about what we've been doing at NTID. The both of us have been working at the Center for Access Technology. I'm more part-time. Chris works there full-time. I use as much time as I can working at this center because it's an exciting place to go to and be at. So before we begin the lecture, I would like to have a quick and dirty video, show you a quick and dirty video of what we've been putting together. This is not the final video by a long shot. But just to give you just the briefest idea of what we've been doing at NTID, this is a very rough cut. There is no sound in the video. Okay. Not bad for a rough start, right? Our students worked really hard on this and on such a short notice. So let's give a hand for them. Thank you. We'll let Chris, thank you. So I'm going to let Chris talk a little bit about himself, his background, and give you an idea on why we've decided to share this experience, and we have this passion together to work on various projects at NTID. First, this is Chris here. I'm going to give you a little bio of who I am. I'm Chris Campbell. I entered NTID in 1991. Before that, I was an only child. I was deaf. My parents didn't find out I was deaf until I was 3. They didn't understand what was going on. After they found out I was deaf, they both learned sign language, and I was very fortunate. Many deaf children have parents who don't sign, and I was very lucky and fortunate that my parents learned sign language. So I entered RIT. I graduated in 1996. I spent 15 years as a software engineer. I used C# from, 2001, and that was the early days, and I was an early adopter. About 5 years ago, I started teaching at NTID. I normally teach computer programming, web development, database development, and I just joined the Center on Access Technology full-time as a research associate professor. My wife is also deaf. She has Usher syndrome, which means she's slowly losing her vision over time, in addition to being deaf. So I've seen her challenges as she goes through this. Both of my children are deaf. It just happened. I'm the only deaf person in my family. And same thing with my wife, and we just happen to have 2 deaf children. So they're both very different children. One prefers to sign in ASL, American Sign Language, and is in 6th grade at Rochester Institute for the Deaf. The other one signs pretty well and is more in a mainstream school in 5th grade. So I get both of their perspectives from the residential school and a mainstream school. It's nice to have so many different perspectives, and I'm very thrilled to be here as well. Hi, this is Brian here. I have a hearing family, and I'm the only deaf person. And that's pretty common for deaf people in the world. I have 2 older brothers, and unfortunately, I was the youngest. Some people say, oh, you're lucky to be the baby. But really, I respectfully disagree. But my experience going through the acceptance of growing up and trying to communicate with my family members. I've built up a lot of frustration because of that. Really, my parents didn't know I was deaf until I was 3. So really, believe me when I am... When I have my first child, I will have my child tested for... hearing loss on the first day and not wait till they're 3. I think they thought I had a mental disability, really, or a learning disability, and they were concerned with me that I wasn't speaking, I wasn't responding to their noises. And looking back, I think it took you 3 years to figure that out. But even though after finding out, they sent me to a specialist to catch up on my language acquisition, reading, learning sign. And when my mom told me, when they saw me signing for the first time to, quote unquote, communicate for the first time, it really was a touching experience for her. And growing up with a family who signs and being the only deaf person is a challenge. For example, during dinner time,
There's a dinner table syndrome.
There's a dinner table syndrome, DTS. And you might be wondering what that means. So what it means is when I sit down with a family and they're all speaking, I'm trying to capture what they're saying, but I can't keep up. So oftentimes I'm the first to finish eating. I eat as fast as I can, and then I ask to be excused. They tell me no, and I have to sit there patiently. And really, I'm not participating in their conversation. So that's just how it is. So that's my experience growing up in a hearing family. I've always been a high achiever, and I went to Purdue University. And I experienced a lot of accessibility challenges there in my first year. My interpreter was an hour away. If the interpreter was sick, my backup interpreter was 2.5 hours away. So I wasn't always so lucky to have access. So I got through. I transferred to RIT. I graduated there. I became a participant of NTID because I felt like it was important to me based on my experience growing up. Sorry, I'm going on too much, so we're going to go ahead with the lecture. I could talk all day about my experience, so I just want to make sure Mark has some time as well. NTID is one of 11 colleges at RIT. In 1965, it was passed and established. And in 1968 will be its 50th anniversary. I mean, sorry, next year will be its 50th anniversary. So next year, 2018. So let me talk about a little bit about our classroom environment at RIT. So we have something called direct versus mediated instruction. Direct instruction is, you know, and getting information directly from the instructor. You, most of you being hearing, are able to get direct instruction from the instructor because that is spoken communication. You're getting that information directly. But here in this meeting, you are getting mediated information from the interpreter. So we have different accommodations for mediated instruction through sign language interpreters, note-taking, note-takers. So you might be wondering why we have note-takers, and that's really to help deaf students to maintain concentration on the interpreter without having to look down and write. If they look down and write, they lose that connection to the information. So they need to have constant access to communication through the interpreter. So it relieves the burden of both having to take notes and watch the interpreter at the same time. And also, the third type of accommodation is real-time captioning. Not all of those are perfect solutions, and we were looking to improve that. Incidental learning results from external stimulus. That means something I wish I had more of, right? More of external stimulation. I can hear, like, for example, hearing my kids. My three kids are hearing, and they pick up a lot of things externally, just passively listening to things in the environment. And I'm missing out, unfortunately. I can see the world, though, in the future where I'm not missing out on those opportunities. So that's my vision for this world. My vision is to be able to have incidental learning experiences. The point is, and the key is, access for everyone here today. Everyone here wants access, and that is our goal as well. Okay. Interpreters, take a breath. Okay, so NTID was founded established in 2007. And the Center on Access Technology was established in 2007. And the goal was to change the playing field, to bring us up to par with society and be able to have access in the learning environment, not just in the university, not just NTID, but across the nation, all universities and colleges and educational environments. So Gary Bem, please raise your hand. He's in the audience here. He's the director. The founder, director, part founder. We started with evaluating different access technologies that were already out there in the world. But then recently, we started creating different projects to, because there were no solutions out in the field. Nothing on the shelf. So we decided, why not create solutions, create something to alleviate that burden? That's the goal of our center. And our focus is our students. We involve the students at every level. We mentor them, we work with them, and that's really what makes us stand out at RIT, because people come and they're amazed. They're like, wow, you have so many students working here. And we have that comment almost daily, because we believe we can empower those students to create the solutions. And we want to help them through that process.
So some of the projects that we have been working on are here on the projector. You may not be sure about some of those, but we have so many other projects. It's very cool. But now the phones are becoming smaller and smaller, and the vibration notification is becoming weaker and weaker. So I've called it a phantom vibration, because you can't really feel it sometimes. Sometimes you get a message or notification, and you just don't know. So we've developed this kind of tool. It hooks up to your keychain, and it's amazingly powerful. It could simulate an earthquake, basically. It's so powerful, but, you know, it was no good way to let somebody know that they were receiving a message in the past until we created this. We've built this hardware, and we've programmed it, and we've linked it to our phones with Bluetooth. To achieve this, we've worked with outsourced our technology to other companies to help work on this project. You may be looking here and say, this is an interesting project, and it's really been an experimentation. We thought about how teachers usually turn away from their classroom to write on the board, and oftentimes with deaf students will take that time to chat or to get lost in other thoughts because there's no connection with the teacher. So I personally try to minimize writing on the board and losing that connection. So we created a new model. It's a screen. It's a dual pane screen. And we can see through it, and they can see through it, using cameras on both sides. We really can't see through it, but they see my writing and its continuous eye contact with the classroom. It's really quite fascinating. We've been working on it for a while, but we've put it on hold because of another project we've been working on. Here's another example of some of our projects. A smart cane is a cane that can notify the user about its environment. This cane has really been designed for a deaf and blind user. They can't hear things in their environment, but they can feel vibrations. So sometimes it'll vibrate to let the user know what's in the surrounding area. That's another project we've been working on at NTID. Another project we've been working on is creating storybook apps. We've partnered with Gallaudet University. They reached out to us, actually, to work on a storybook app with them. So we've created this app for Android platforms and also Windows using the Surface. So using the Surface, we can allow children to color and make it a more interactive experience. But I want to highlight the bilingual aspect of these applications. You can see sign language and written words, and it will really help to improve the language acquisition. The goal is to provide complete access. They can see the sign language and see the words written. And they can also click on those particular words and receive assigned vocabulary for that word. We've also been experimenting with the HoloLens at NTID. Like I said, my vision is incidental learning. I want to know what's happening in my environment. I'd like to share a story with you, an interesting experience I've had using the HoloLens. So I use the HoloLens sometimes for real-time captioning, to develop the app. I can put my caption anywhere on the screen that I want. So suppose Will was speaking. I can add the captioning over Will's person or next to him because I want to maximize my attention that I'm giving Will, rather than look to the center of a screen to receive the words. I feel like it's more of a personal interaction if I'm able to look in his direction. Also with remote interpreting, for example, let's say I'm taking a nuclear physics class, which I won't. You know, suppose I was taking that class, it'd be hard to find an interpreter with sufficient understanding in the material. But if I could find an interpreter that lived 2,000 miles away, I'd be able to impose that interpreter into my classroom. I have an example here. I was using the HoloLens at the time, and I had a teacher writing on the board, and I had my interpreter imposed. How many of you have used the HoloLens? That's great. You know, I don't have to explain. You know, the very cool thing about this is the interpreter sees exactly what I see. So imagine the professor is teaching and says this or that. I wouldn't know what they were referring to, and the interpreter wouldn't know what they were referring to if they couldn't see exactly what I was seeing. You know, so the interpreter isn't only signing. It's also directing me where to look. The interpreter is able to actually circle on the surface what I'm seeing in real time. Another interesting thing is the interpreter can also hear my surroundings. You know, it's hearing its surrounding. The interpreter hears its surroundings where it is. But using the HoloLens, the HoloLens has earbuds and mics so that she can hear that somebody is speaking behind me. And she'll say to me, somebody behind you has made a comment. I said, wow. And that's amazing. You know, that's something that you don't realize. And that's a part of the incidental learning that I've been seeking. Another project we've been working with is real-time text display. And we have captioning happening, and oftentimes it'll happen on a separate screen from where the action is taking place. So we'll have the PowerPoint on one location, we have the teacher speaking, and then we have the real-time text display off to the side. So we're trying to create a way to have the captions follow the teacher. And we've been using the products from Microsoft called the Kinect to make that happen. So here you can see a diagram. The Kinect is projected to the board, hooked up to the internet, and you can imagine what it looks like. I'm going to show you. I have a video here. Also, if another person interrupts and takes over the screen, the dialogue will also follow that new speaker. That's pretty cool. So we were trying to think outside of the box and think about possible applications for some of our technologies. And we were envisioning the theater as a wide stage there. And perhaps we could drop a screen and impose the dialogue on stage. We've been researching these ideas. We have great ambition for this new technology that we've created. So let me go ahead and turn the presentation over to Chris, and he'll take it home.
So now we're coming to the reason why we're here. So like I mentioned before, I came in 1991 at RIT. There was 10 students myself who were directly accepted for a bachelor's program. At NTID, there was a large amount of associate students there, associate level students. And that that used instruction, with direct instruction, without interpreters. Once you get into the bachelor's program, or master's program, or doctorate program, you use mediated instruction with the interpreters or captioning, okay? About 5 years ago, 36% of NTID professors were instructing at the bachelor's level, through mediated instruction, okay? Now there's 42%. So it's going up every year. And that's good indication of success of K through 12 education for deaf and hard of hearing students. More and more students are going to college. That's wonderful. But it's tough to meet the demand to provide the services to those students. We also have increased demand for real-time captioning because many deaf and hard of hearing students come into RIT, they haven't learned sign yet. So they need to use captioning instead of interpreters. And that's a tough thing to do, to find qualified captioners. and to keep them. I didn't realize until last year that high schools, or most high schools, didn't teach typing in classes anymore. So now we have a younger generation of people that don't know how to type quickly. So they just, it's a texting generation now. So, yeah. So now we have a little bit over 500 students mainstreamed at RIT. So we have about 58 students in the College of Applied Sciences and Technology, 56 in the College of Business, 41 in the College of Science, 79 in the College of Liberal Arts, 79 in the College of Arts and Sciences, and 80 in Liberal Arts, 37 in the College of Engineering, 73 in the College of Computing, and 29 in the College of Health Science and Technology. And then another 54 in general programs like sustainability and interdisciplinary studies. So we have a large variety of students and subjects that we have to teach at RIT. Many of them are technical. In 2004, when we first introduced cPrint, that was our homegrown project or program or product that we developed at RIT, NTID. We experimented a little the next year, and the following years, we increased those. And in 2007, we just opened it up for general use for most students. We see every year there's an upward trend. The only time we had a little slump was in 2013 and 2012, because we had sequestration of a lot of federal funding. And that really halted almost everything. But then we have an upward trend again. We're well over 25,000 this year, I'm sure. So now we have a lot of issues. And we have 12 open positions for captioners, and it's just hard to fill. The captionists, if they're out sick, it's hard to find a replacement for them. We have 55 full-time captioners on staff currently. So we thought, okay, we'll try and use ASR to help supplement the captionists. We're trying to accelerate research and development to try and provide a solution as soon as we possibly could. So last spring, we really tried to experiment on ASR services. We used like IBM, Watson, Microsoft. We started with Bing speech API. And at Will's suggestion, we moved over to Translator API. So we noticed some issues. Some teachers were simcoming simultaneous communication, so they speak and sign at the same time. And now using ASR with that has mixed results, because a lot of the times when you're using two languages at the same time, you're repeating words or you're missing words in one language or the other. So it's confusing. So if you're speaking at a normal pace, you'll get better results. So we also had issues with high rate of error, particularly STEM terms and formulas, mathematical formulas. So when Will visited Rochester in February, we brought him to a few different classes, and one of the classes was about heat transfer in the College of Engineering. It did particularly well, except for the formulas. There was another class about language science. There was a lot to do with it. We used a lot of ASR in that class, but There were individual letters that it couldn't capture, and a lot of complicated words related to, you know, machine learning in speech. ASR did not hit that mark particularly well. Our proposed solutions are trying to use customer language models. At NTID, we have a gold mine of data. Because we have a Department of Access Services, they have 55 full-time captioners and 125 full-time interpreters. So normally we hire about 400 note takers every semester. And so we've been maintaining that for a while now. Since 1996, we've had written and typed notes, nothing electronic. We've had transcripts since 2004, electronic textbooks. Transcripts since 2004, class notes since 1999, and PowerPoint presentations as well. The idea is we're trying to prepare the system prior to the lecture, right? Which should improve the accuracy of the ASR captioning. A proposed solution here is what we're hoping for is the instructor will wear a headphone, and which will actually feed to the ASR engine in the cloud, and then it will work its magic and become captioning, right? Over time, we're hoping that maybe we'll allow the students to use their own devices, like an iPad or an Android phone, and connect to the cloud to receive that captioning on their own device. So we're starting to move more aggressively now. In the summer, we're hoping to do some research on comprehension of ASR captioning versus real-time captioning, and comprehension of ASR versus interpreting. And in the fall, we're really hoping to address immediate needs of NTID. Well, there are a lot of instructors. Like myself, who don't speak, but sign. And we have some first-year students that come in, and they don't know sign yet. So what to do with those students is maybe use an interpreter in the classroom for them. But the problem is, if you have an interpreter and a captionist as well, that's two people in the classroom for one sign language instructor. So we're trying to use an interpreter with the microphone in using ASR. And we have ASR captioning for the students that don't know sign language. So we'll probably try that pilot program in the fall, and if it's successful, we'll expand that in the spring. It seems like an easy solution to solve than a hearing in the deaf classroom as opposed to a hearing classroom. So we're looking at the captioning and making adjustments to ourselves as instructors. And now we've explained a lot about our center on access. And if you have ideas that will impact the deaf and hard of hearing community, please reach out to us, please. We have a lot of students who can evaluate your products. We have 1,200 deaf and hard of hearing students at NTID and in different disciplines. And Rochester, I believe it or not, they have a high per capita of deaf and hard of hearing population in the US, or the highest level. Washington, D.C. might have more, but you know, they're really scattered. In Rochester, everything's within a 20-minute drive. It's not a big city, and so, which is great. It's a great resource. You can always bump into a deaf person anywhere out in the community. So So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our next speaker, Dr. Mark Marshark. He's a professor at NTID. He directs the Center for Educational Research Partnership. His research is focused on language learning and cognition with deaf learners. Thank you.
Yes, fine, thanks. Whatever makes you happy. As long as you're not in the way of the fancy captions. Okay. Given that we're running late, I'm happy to cut what I was gonna do in half. Boss man's about to walk in the room. So Will, I can cut this in half if necessary. Just, you'll see.
We have until noon.
Okay.
But give a little bit of time for questions.
Yeah,
so
you'll see. The first half is gonna be pretty direct. Second half might be a little bit off, so we'll see how it goes. Just a couple words of clarification. I'm not going to introduce myself. You'll see from the content what I do. Brian or Chris, I forget which, mentioned that NTID is one of the colleges of RIT. RIT is a private university. NTID is funded directly by the US Department of Education. That's why sequestration hit us. I'm director, founder of the Center for Education Research Partnerships. It was the first research center to spin off from NTID. We're the ones that don't take NTID money. All of our research, all of our activities are funded by agencies, organizations, which is why I have to remember to thank them, and also the schools and programs around the world that work with us. I've originally joined this group for two reasons. I'm the research guy, number one, mostly working with deaf kids, K through 12, but also at the university level. Second, after 9 arm surgeries, I'm not supposed to type, I'm not supposed to sign. I've been using that other inferior product, what's that called? Dragon, since 1.0. So I'm the most experienced ASR person at RIT. I tell people, if you don't have a choice, Dragon's wonderful. If you have a choice, this is the ASL sign for it sucks. But as a research guy, I always have to give some excuses in advance. One of them, especially relevant to this group, is that when I do presentations, people are coming with quite a variety of perspectives, some sensitivities, and different responsibilities. My responsibility for the last 9 years, it's a long story if you want it later, is focusing on evidence-based practice in deaf education. How do we know what works best for the diverse deaf kids that we have? As a research person in this field, it means asking the right questions, living with the answers even if I don't like them. And some of the findings that we've had, you'll probably see some people don't like. But that's what I do. I'm going to draw some general points today. It's not as simple as I'm going to make it look. You could find a research article to support anything you want in deaf education. But we're dealing with really complex questions, so simple correlations, simple associations aren't enough. Individual differences among deaf kids are quite a bit bigger than hearing kids. They have all the diversity of hearing kids, plus issues related to their hearing losses, related to their early language backgrounds, early experiences, and so on. The population of deaf kids is changing dramatically. For those who came into deaf education even 10 years ago, students today are different. Our knowledge about deaf kids learning, how they might be different from hearing kids, also is changing quite rapidly. In other words, it's complicated. Okay, let me tell you some lies my grandmother told me. Some of them, no big deal. Starve a fever, feed a cold. I'm one of those people who feeds a fever and feeds a cold. You'd have to know my grandmother. She really did tell me that a drink in the morning would help cure a hangover. Medically, we know that's not true. Psychologically, helps a lot. Some of the lies my grandmother told me weren't quite as innocuous. Changing right-handers to left-handers, it's not a good thing. Not all deaf children can learn to speak, even if the propaganda says they can. There has never, ever been any evidence that learning to sign interferes with learning to speak. In fact, I was working on a project when I was awake at 4 o'clock this morning from a doctor in Massachusetts trying to show parents that early sign language actually can facilitate, support spoken language by deaf kids with or without cochlear implants. It's another story if you have an hour later. Deaf children are not hearing children who can't hear. If I get to that part, you'll see there are a variety of cognitive differences relevant to this ASR project that make them quite different. This isn't actually a lie from my grandmother. It's a lie from a very well-known deaf guy who wrote a number of years ago that deaf students graduate from high school reading at a third to fourth grade level. And although I thought he figured it out, I just read something he wrote that referred to it again as a fourth grade plateau in deaf kids' reading. Okay, there are two issues with this. One is he misread the data. The data that this comes from, these are actually medians, you know, 50% above, 50% below. It's not that all deaf high school graduates are reading at the fourth grade level. We're obsessed with the 50% below that level. Nobody does any research about the 50% above that level. In addition, this was based on a really relatively limited subset of deaf kids. In schools for the deaf that have an affiliation with Gallaudet University. Greater hearing losses, no cochlear implants, they all use sign language. In fact, today, this red line is the actual reading levels on average of deaf kids in the US. It doesn't look anything like the Gallaudet data. They're still a year to a year and a half behind at each grade level, but clearly not graduating from high school reading like fourth graders. Well, some lies my students told me. They believe the propaganda. Our students think they don't read very well, but they're sure that they understand interpreters like Dean 100%, because he's a good one. If I flatter him, he'll make me look better. Okay? Well, are they right? My interest in this actually started with, anybody a tennis player? In Dunblane, Scotland, home of Andy Murray. Oh. In a bar in Dunblane, Scotland, most of my good ideas come in bars. I was with a friend from the Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children in Australia. They had just finished a study in which they had middle school kids seeing three different geography lessons from a deaf teacher using Australian Sign Language. Auslan. Classroom looked like this. Those little boxes are laptop computers. One day the kids had a lesson where they only saw the teacher signing, native signer. One day they only had captions, provided by, in Australia, a sign language interpreter who's been trained to provide captions. Interpreting is a long story, but it means that it was a lot more accurate than you would get in a lot of situations. That is, knowing how to adjust the language to match the skills, the knowledge of the deaf kids. On a third day, they had captions and they saw the interpreter. So they looked over their computers and they could have both. Okay? So the classroom looked something like this. And my friend was absolutely delighted because thanks to real-time text in the classroom and the quality of their education, he was thrilled because what he found was that the kids who were getting the text, the real-time text or both, learned just as much as the kids who were getting the sign language. He was delighted. Until I asked him, and how many questions were there? Turns out there were 24 questions. Kids were actually at 50%, not at close to 90%. The glass was half empty. It wasn't a glass half full. They weren't understanding the sign language any better than they were reading. Well, that led us to ask the same question at NTID with college students. Again, our students telling us at NTID they learn more if it's signed. We did the same task, except now we included an interpreting, someone not as good as Dean, and we included hearing students. What you can see is that the real-time text actually led to significantly better learning than either the interpreter or the two together. Now, with the two together, that is interpreting and the text, students told us they weren't sure where they were supposed to look, but still it was better than interpreting alone. And in none of those cases did they learn as much as the hearing students did. Well, the student complaint was, yeah, well, you gave us text, or you gave us interpreting, but the test was written. We would do better with signed tests. You can see that doesn't make a difference. We actually did this study where we had signed input, a signed lecture, and a signed test for the deaf students. A signed lecture and a written test, reading the material, and a signed test, reading the material, and a written text. In other words, the good 2x2 design. And the same for the hearing students who heard it, had an oral test, or read it and had a written test, and all the crossover. And since this is probably going to look ugly, yes, wait, let's see. Well, you're missing the first one, which was, first one would have been when they read it, and then they had a written test. But it looked a lot like that. What you're seeing here is when they read it and had a signed test. In both cases, the hearing students did better than the deaf students, which wouldn't be surprising because they read the material. Here you see the signed input and a written test. Again, the hearing students doing better, presumably because it's a written test. Only when the input, the lecture was signed and the test was signed, were the two equal for the deaf students. What's interesting, if you could see, and you're clearly not going to see, the interesting story, by the way, I am from the National Technical Institute for the Deaf, so we know how to deal with these things. Not. It turns out that in all of these cases, the output, the written or the signed test, didn't make a difference. Students actually understood, learned more when they read it than when they saw it signed. In all of our studies over the last 10 years, we have found either deaf students learning more or the same amount from text, real-time text and printed text, than they do from signing, which is something they don't realize. They think they learn more from signing. Yep, still ugly. Point is, this is not just about sign language. The left thing that's covered up is oral students who use spoken language. They aren't any different in these tasks than the skilled signers. But they are mainstream classrooms. So we have interpreters like Cameron and Dean. Question is, what happens in our classrooms? My students tell me that instead of watching Dean, if I signed for myself, they would learn more. Wrong again, students. Turns out, Chris Bryan talked about direct instruction when I'm signing for myself or speaking for myself, or direct mediated instruction where I'm speaking and Dean is signing for me. Sorry. And for these studies, by the way, we have the best of our 125 interpreters, outstanding teachers, and even with the best signing teachers, you can see that in this case, when she was signing for herself, direct instruction, the deaf students learned just as much from the interpreter. And the hearing students learned more, regardless of whether she was signing for herself, or she was speaking, and Dean was signing for her. So when Dean was, when she was signing for herself, Dean was speaking for the hearing students? Well, of course, our students said it's because she's hearing, and we learn more from deaf teachers, right? Wrong again, kids. Here, direct instruction is ASL from a deaf teacher in the College of Liberal Arts, or either signing directly to the students, or Dean is voicing for him to the hearing students. I'll do that one more time if you want. Please. Happy to. Actually, I'm going to make it worse for you. So this is a deaf instructor who's in our College of Liberal Arts. He's teaching psychology. He's teaching a course here on the neurobiology of schizophrenia. Not bad. So in direct instruction, it's his ASL for the deaf students. Or he has a dedicated interpreter, meaning the same interpreter interprets for all of his classes, advising sessions, because he's teaching deaf and hearing students. So when she's voicing for him in this course, the hearing students actually learned more from the interpreter than they did from the direct instruction from the deaf teacher. Got it? But around this time, speaking to the teachers in the mainstream classrooms at RIT, we realized that deaf students typically come into the classrooms with less content knowledge than their hearing peers, something directly related to the vocabularies and the customized systems we're hoping to create here. So what we started doing was taking the teacher's test, which was always prepared by them. We subtracted what students knew when they came into the classroom by giving them a pretest, which gives us a measure of learning gain. We can also do it statistically, but most people don't care about analyses of covariance, so think of it as learning gain. When we look at how much they actually learn from their own starting point, you can't see it, but the deaf and hearing students learned the same amount. And they learned the same amount from the interpreter or from the teacher signing for herself. Same is true for the deaf teacher. When you look at how much they actually learn, what their gain is, they learn the same amount. Okay, the reason for that, which I'm not going to go into. There are four areas of cognitive processing where we have shown, mostly we, but other people as well, have shown that deaf and hearing learners are different from at least elementary school up. It turns out that a lot of the advantages that you see in elementary school from the kids who have really good language, either because they have deaf parents or because they have cochlear implants and use spoken language, those advantages disappear by high school. That comes from national data from the Department of Education and a lot of work we've done in this country and others. These four areas are ones in which we know about specific differences between deaf learners and hearing learners. Any project that we might want to do together are going to have to take these into consideration. You can't assume that a deaf student reading real-time text is reading like a hearing student, because I'm speaking faster than they read. Any visual materials that we have are going to be adapted, because otherwise, as in our earlier study, you have students trying to see what's on the screen and read the text at the same time. We spent 4 years doing eye tracking studies with portable eye trackers, with students watching the interpreter, watching the screen, watching the teacher, and so on. Because we want time, I'm not going to go into all of these. If you want something, I'll give you my email address at the end. I can send you papers or whatever you want, or a summary chapter. But hopefully, bringing together the kinds of research that we've been doing, right? Clearly, I'm not the engineer. I'm the cognitive psychologist, the developmental psychologist. I've only been with these guys for 3 weeks. But it looks like, both as the ASR user and the kind of work we've been doing, that there's a match made in heaven, and that hopefully we can optimize on both sides of our equation, learning not just of our students, but the K-12 kids that I mostly work with. So I'm going to leave all the rest of this for next time, because we want time for questions, right? Mostly for these guys. Okay.
Okay, we have time for questions. If you're hearing, if you could use the, Tommy, how do I get this in the full, can you, sorry. Yeah, Q&A mode. Oh. We're going to go into full screen mode on here. So if you've joined the conversation, you can ask through your phone, and it will actually indicate who it is that's asking the question on the screen, if you wouldn't mind. We'll still sign, but we'll have the transcript on the screen as well.
Okay, so if there are questions for any of the speakers, we have about 20 minutes for questions. We'd love to have your input. Mark, you're the first questioner.
Just because I'm the new kid on all of this, I'm wondering, the issue that I raised about reading speed, I had never thought of until I was preparing this. And I'm wondering if there's some way to slow down. I'll step back. We can't slow down speakers. How are we going to deal with the issue that many deaf readers can't read the captions as quickly as the speaker is going to speak them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that I have a good answer for that. The problem with delaying the transcripts is that it's no longer real time. We would be getting it well after the lecture would be done, for instance, we finish up. We do have a delay that we put into the transcripts on purpose because of technological issues. We're more or less at the limit now. We could display the transcripts faster, but they would be less settled. So there's actually a 1 to 2 second latency in there that we put in there by design. We could increase the latency, but again, you run into this problem where you're then out of sync with the person that's giving the lecture.
That's why the interpreters, that's why in Australia they use interpreters rather than real-time text like CART. The interpreters condense everything so that they can maintain synchrony with the instructor.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if you have something that distills the transcript into like shorter units or something like that, that's something that could be applied. So you could basically take the transcript that's being generated and after maybe a sentence or two, then distill that into a briefer unit that's displayed on the screen, kind of like what we see with cPrint.
At the same time, because Xerox started in Rochester, we have a deal with Xerox where students get transcripts, deaf students get transcripts after the class. So maybe even if they miss things during a lecture, because they can get the printout later, that resolves most of the difficulties.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We don't have that technology implemented in this service, but I think I'll make a mental note to look into that. Because we have the technology for doing text summarization and text reduction, if you will. That's technology that exists. It's just a matter of applying it here and in a way that that's interactive because you have these transcripts being generated in real time. We're not taking something that's static. We're taking something that's being generated and then distilling it. That's a harder task.
Yeah.
Other questions?
So I have had a bunch of experience with ASR in the past, and
is your mic up?
It should be.
You have to hold it down.
There we go. Sorry. I've had a bunch of experience with ASR in the past, and I've definitely noticed that it's been lacking, especially in extremely technical, mathematical, or computer science fields. Have you done any research onto what the accuracy rate is right now? And also what the accuracy rate would need to be in order for it to be a viable solution on its own.
This is Chris here. I can answer that. Really, we wanted to feel something that was almost equivalent to like an interpreter or CART services. That's about 95% accuracy rate, meaning a word error rate of about 5%.
So, can I say,
Gary, you wanted to say something? I want to add something to Chris's comment. Because we provide services to our students in the classroom, We have to be very sensitive about giving information or accurate information because they sign up for the class, right? When they sign up for a class and they expect to get full access to the full information. So that's why we want to make sure that it's as close to equivalent as possible, functionally equivalent to CART or cPrint. So Will is pushing the to use this sooner, but I want to make sure that we have functional equivalents first.
Yeah, let me respond to Gary's comment and also Chris's comment. Chris is right. CART is the best in class for transcription services, and the error rate that we get with CART is between 4 to 6%. So 5% is about right. With automated speech recognition, we're now seeing error rates around 10 to 25%, depending on the content. So taking the heat transfer class that Chris referred to earlier, in that class, we are taking our vanilla models, the models that you, actually it's not these models, but our vanilla models that are used for speech recognition in the classroom, we're getting around 15% error rate. When we apply adaptation to that class content, so in this case it was one slide that the professor provided plus some class notes, so it was probably just a few hundred words, we were able to shave off a 1%, so we were at 14%. However, qualitatively, when you look at the corrections, and I don't have a slide here I could show you, it really got, in that 1%, most of the technical vocabulary that it was missing before, including formulas that he was saying that it was garbling. So yes, we only dropped 1% with this adaptation, but qualitatively, that was a dramatic drop in the error and improvement in the quality. We did some additional experimentation where this professor's voice, we did adaptation to his voice. So this is work that Ivo did. I bet it will get his name wrong. He'll be, yes, he always loves, he likes to call him Ivo. He did this work and we got it down to 11%. Okay, so that's using 30 minutes of audio that's been transcribed plus the language model adaptation that I referred to before. 11% is now getting within reach. If you think about it, human transcription, the upper end is probably high upper single digits, so around 9%. 8 or 9% is probably your average for human transcribers. CART is at the lower end because, you know, CART is the best you can get, best in class. So 11% versus 9%, you're getting awfully close.
If I may, yeah. Add to that, if I need to do something, is that working? Hello?
You need to take your finger off the button.
Finger off the button?
Yeah.
Now I am talking, or?
Press and hold the
button. Ah, okay. Okay, now I got
keep it on the
button. Yeah. First time using myself. So, I was going to talk about the error rate. So the idea is that the more the professor uses the system, the better it gets. So basically, we did an experiment with MIT Talks, and with about 14 lectures, so a whole semester, the error rate in the beginning of the semester was around 25-30%. By combining language adaptation and acoustic adaptation, we brought it to under 10%, so to 9%, for that specificity. Specifically chemistry class, so it was very technical course. Do I need to press something to stop, or?
It should stop if you stop talking. Here. Other questions?
So I thought the HoloLens, augmented reality, transcription, aspect was really interesting. So I was wondering if you've thought about other applications of that where you may know the transcript in advance and you don't actually have to do transcription like in a play or a lecture or a theater where you actually could have the full thing and just sort of you have the experience of seeing the event with the right, you know, almost like with the script being displayed. I think there's a lot of other applications there that are really interesting. So have you thought about any of these?
This is Brian.
Yes, and we really have been narrowing our research for the classroom, thinking about applications to outside of the classroom. Yeah, it seems amazing. That's a great application there for the HoloLens. You're right. We can broaden our vision for the application of our products, but we want to make sure that we have a universal experience. Make sure that that is there for those wearing the HoloLens. And we're trying to figure out how people can use the HoloLens and if they can gain better accessibility from that product. You know, we haven't included that in our research yet, the impact of using the HoloLens and accessibility. But I like that idea. Thank you, Mike.
So Gary had a comment on that.
I just want to jump in here quickly. Gary here. As Brian mentioned, that we have two HoloLenses at our disposal in our lab. We've played with it. But if we want to use it for more than 20 minutes, it hurts our head a little bit. It becomes a little sore. So I'm sure that your team here at Microsoft will be able to make it lighter and lighter, because obviously the battery weighs quite a bit. So I believe that in the future, when HoloLens becomes lighter, it will be easier to use. And I think applications in theater, wearing it for an hour wouldn't be an issue, but the user experience right now is really important in the audience as theater goers. So.
Yeah, it is very heavy. I can see that.
This is Chris. I'd like to add another comment about the application outside of the classroom.
You could be able to use a HoloLens in a movie theater if the deaf patron is sitting in the audience, if you know in advance. Maybe you have access to the dialogue for each character in the film. But even then, we can take it one step further. We can set up the imposition of who's speaking on the screen. And it doesn't just have to be on the bottom. It can be next to the character speaking. You know, you have the villain on the left side and the hero on the right side, and the dialogue is above their head, and that kind of application is powerful. No, it's not just about the words, also, it's the sound effects and seeing those in a visual way. Like, you guys hear the explosion, and maybe we have some kind of visual representation, maybe something that pops off the screen. Maybe when the door knocks, we have a visual for that. You know, rather than words at the bottom of a screen.
Yeah, that would be really cool. We have the application, you know about the Hearing AI app that does some of that on the device. Gary.
There's another big use that we could use in our system here in the workforce, really. We prepare our students for their jobs. Really, that's why we're there. And when they graduate, they go to work, and they have to deal with communication with their employers, their supervisor, their coworkers, and what have you. And that is a very specialized environment that they're in. In the machine shop or biology lab, or we could use that ASR captioning with customers as well, you know, customize that to various environments.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Mike had another question or comment.
So in speech recognition, as the word error rate gets lower and lower, we start to get concerned with what we call interlabeler agreement, which is if you give the same two different transcribers the same audio, there will be just differences between the two. And so we believe it's unreasonable for a computer to get below that number, because if humans can't even agree, then the computer, we don't even know which is correct. So I was wondering for interpreters, if there's any similar concept of sort of, you know, if you have two people interpreting the same class, you're saying 95% accuracy, but is there a degree of difference that the two interpreters will have?
Mark has a good explanation for that one.
I don't know if it's a good one, but I don't know that anybody's done research on that, but in our work, we're doing that all the time, trying to get agreement between interpreters. And it normally runs around 95%. But at the same time, I mean, Will talked about CART as the gold standard. We've compared CART to cPrint, which is condensing. Now, I don't know if anybody's looked at the error rate for cPrint, but we don't find any difference in student learning when they have verbatim CART compared to when they have someone like an interpreter condensing it into print. So I think rather than trying to get to the level of CART, just because that's CART's number, 4 or 5%, we should probably look at the level at which it makes a difference to student learning, which is the practical one.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Looking at the student the learning outcomes is probably more relevant in some mm-hmm. respects than word error rate is. I mean, but for automated recognition, of course, we're going to look at the measures that we're accustomed to looking at. But I think we should actually do this analysis on the learning outcomes using speech recognition as compared to existing services, such as cPrint or CART.
Or interpreters. I mean, especially...
Or interpreters.
In our work, we have interpreters who have practiced the material, and we make sure that we have agreement. But Cameron and Dean right now are doing this on the fly so that the error rate for less skilled interpreters, of course, doing this on the fly, is going to be much higher than 5%. And the question of whether that actually influences learning or not, for us, is the real question. I realize you have not higher standards. You have different standards. This system is awesome, by the way.
Thank you. We have Chris back here in the back. I think we have time for one more question. Chris, you're the final question.
We learned a lot about the classroom experience and the learning experience. In the college, the social life is very important as well. Do you have studies that show changes that technology can promote in terms of the deaf and the hearing students talking to each other or communicating with each other?
If you mean communicating through technology, it hasn't been done yet. I just wrote about it in a chapter that just went to press. One of the issues for deaf kids, even the ones who are now using spoken language and implants, is that in elementary school there aren't too many issues, except that the kids, deaf kids who have the best hearing and speech are the ones who are most accepted by the hearing kids. Even then, even with a cochlear implant, there are nuances in speech like sarcasm, irony, whispering, that are more important in the teenage years. And we raise the question of what is more difficult for, say, a young teen? Is it going into a social situation where you're not really understanding, situation where you might have an interpreter with you, which could be really embarrassing, or would it be worthwhile having some kind of technology? There are people in Rochester, people who are hard of hearing, who use portable FM systems, and it's not unusual to have someone hold a microphone in front of you. Now, whether that's going to work with teens or not remains to be seen, but it's a great idea. I think we could do it. I mean, we've already started some research plans. There's no reason why we couldn't look at social settings.
Gary, go ahead.
I just wanted to add to Mark's comment. We're trying to improve that social skills between the deaf and the hearing. I've been in the works for a long time. And one thing we've been using now is VRI. That's an on-demand video relay interpreting concept. So you can imagine a laptop, and maybe I'm deaf and I want to speak to a hearing person. I would open up my laptop, connect the VRI instantly. There would be an interpreter there on the screen.
to mediate the conversation I'm having with the person next to me. And for some reason, not every student has been taking advantage of that tool, and I'm not sure why. Maybe the students feel like they want to be more normal, communicate one-on-one, rather than depending on some type of assisted technology like the VRI. With the ASR, I think that would be able to help a lot. It can minimize the dependency that some deaf people feel working with another interpreter or communicating with somebody else in their presence.
Go ahead, Mark.
Just Chris, if you want it or if anybody else wants it. I was just searching my memory banks. We, in a book that is about to come out, we just published a chapter by a guy who's been looking at automatic speech recognition in social settings, at least in classrooms, laboratory settings, or where students are working together on projects. And I just figured out where it is. So if you want it, let me know and I'll send it to you.
Cool, thank you. That's very interesting.
Okay, we need to wrap it up here. We're a little bit over time, and we're losing our interpreters. thank you so much, Chris, Brian, and Mark, for a wonderful set of lectures. And I don't know why my transcripts aren't showing up here. They're showing up on my phone just fine.
They're over there.
I don't know. If they're here, they're showing up on the other devices. I think it's showing up just off the screen. You just have to look way up.
It's a good cue.
Okay, thank you very much.